Blog Talk Radio.
Real sports guy.
The NBA
is off and running, and you know, we'll get into what's been going on with the NBA and kind of, you know, how we can view some of the things that are happening there. And then we'll, you know, have some fun with what we've been looking at with the playoffs now that we're up and going with Ray Lewis and everything else. But it's just been incredible. Justin, I want to start with you just before we go into our segment. You know, what's been fresh about you in the new year in terms of sports? What are some of the things that you're excited about in the new year?
Well, you guys know me. I'm a basketball junkie. I am Mr. Basketball, Michigan's finest ATL, you know, so I've been real excited about what my Hawks got going on right now. Playoff started today, will be the third seed in the East, so that's just great to see. Can't wait to hit the Highlight Factory Friday night, watch us beat up on Utah. So that's been exciting. Obviously, the Falcons being 13-3 is even more exciting with aspirations to go to New Orleans. So, you know, the buzz around town is just you know, iconic right now. And I don't think there's a better city to live in right now than Atlanta, Georgia. So if I had to put my finger on it, it's got to be the Falcons being 13-3 with a playoff bye and the Atlanta Hawks being the number three team in the Eastern Conference.
All right, Jay, what are you excited about looking forward to in 2013?
I'm going to have to throw a flag on JP because he said there's no better place to live in but Atlanta. But he's from Michigan. He was just up here visiting me and told me it was like it's Vegas. So I'm going to front on the D right now. But coming from the D, I'm excited about Andre Drummond, the Pistons first-round draft pick. I'm excited to see he's coming up in the future. And then you know me, I'm excited about my Tigers taking the field in March. That's what I'm looking forward to.
And we excited about having Inside the Park come back for a second year and really dropped it. Y'all had it buzzing in 2012. Took an idea, y'all made it. Y'all were able to breathe some life into it and like that. I'm excited. And we'll get into 2013 at, you know, all this stuff that we talk about, new and trendy and everything else. But at the end of the day, as we talk about some of our major sports, the more things change, the more they remain the same. The more some of the fundamental things that I think we all grew up in terms of watching great teams and great organizations and how they function lead us. Is still critical today. And I think as we talked about the national championship game last night, I think that'll be kind of a critical kind of thing, a point that I definitely want to make, you know, in a time when we're talking about people like, you know, Chip Kelly and all these other things that we'll definitely get into today, that, you know, just that old, sometimes that old foundation, that old just doing it the old solid way, you know, nothing flashy, just line up and do what you do is very important. And I think we're seeing that particularly on the football side, both in college and in the pros, you know, just those teams who are still here and still there are just doing it the old-fashioned way. And some of the organizations that we're seeing who are consistent in winning have a clear vision, clear direction, clear build on fundamentals that you can say the 49ers of the 80s were built on, or the Dallas Cowboys or of the early 90s were built on, or the Steelers of the 70s. Some of those general principles, even now with all the funky little stuff, is still there, and I want to see in 2013 whether or not that's true, or whether or not people catch on to that, you know, as they try to assess, you know, their own organizations in terms of taking it to the next level. And so, you know, those are some of the things I'm hoping to see. You know, when we start to define what's successful, you know, is it just those same old things we've always known to be principles of success that have been leading to championship organizations, and our people are finally going to understand that and figure it out, or are they going to still try to follow the gimmicks and all the other things that are not sound. And so for me, that is something that I'm very much interested in exploring, and something that I want to get done. What is something, I'm going to ask one more question before we move into the show with y'all. What's something that as y'all reflect on 2012 that really for y'all defined that year for y'all as sports enthusiasts, as folks that I know y'all are really about? Is there anything about 2012 that, as you thought about that old experience, was that really made that a great year for sports for y'all? Justin, why don't I start with that, with you?
Okay, before I answer, RJ made a great comment about Detroit being my Vegas. I'd like to open the floor for RJ to tell everybody what I was in town for and what occurred while I was there. And then I'll get back to your question, D. Wills.
How you bringing up old stuff?
How do y'all think?
Tell the people, man. Tell the people. They want to hear it.
He came in town to watch Calvin Johnson break the record, which he did against the Atlanta Falcons.
Okay. True. He did do that as the Falcons went ahead and pounced on Detroit's head. But enough of that. You know, we got Detroit-Atlanta beef going on right now. That's always interesting. But D-Wills, to answer your question, for 2012, I think the most fascinating story in sports had to be the Miami Heat winning the NBA championship during a truncated season and LeBron James overcoming all of the negative publicity that he received for the way he left Cleveland, for his non-ability to make game-winning shots, and just him leading the Miami Heat to the NBA Finals over the OK City Thunder, where he was the MVP, and he did everything to will his team to victory. That, in addition to him then leading the Dream Team to Olympic gold medal, I think LeBron James made 2012 sports special.
I'd agree with you on that. I'd agree with you that. RJ, for 2012, what was special about that for you?
Yeah, I definitely agree with JP wholeheartedly. For LeBron to be able to take all that venom he was getting and make people love him again, that was definitely big. But, you know, me being a baseball guy, I got to say the energy and excitement that I saw Mike Trout and Bryce Harper bring back to baseball, I thought that was exciting. That was big for the game, and it got a lot of people back interested in the sport. So that was a pretty big deal for me.
And, I agree with you. I think both of y'all hit some great stories there. I would agree. I like the LeBron one. I think that was huge in terms of just the transformation and reminding us of, you know, how quickly you can transform who you are through having some success. And so, you know, I thought that was great. And I do agree, you know, baseball merging with some of those young stars and getting people excited about it, really good. One of the things that's really tough about as we end up, we kind of come into the end of the year, is that we always talk about that Black Monday as we come into the new year. And the NFL did some record cleaning. And so for the funky editorial, we got some stuff that we really want to explore. So but we first of all, we just do it a little bit like this.
Fellas, one thing we need to say.
Yes,
shall we say it, y'all?
Yes,
Melvin,
right.
Jimmy,
yes.
Coleman,
yes.
Ryan,
yes.
Sit.
Yes.
Everybody want to get funky one more time.
They usually call it Black Monday, but they should have called it Bloody Monday. Folks was just, they were letting people go left and right. Some of the people that we expected to get fired, Andy Reid and others were there. And then we had some surprises like Lovie Smith. It was as if, you know, and some of the stuff did not make any sense. And so I know both of you gentlemen were kind of paying attention to it. My first question, and I'll start with you, Justin. Who got let go, who should have, and who deserved to be let go? And then who kept their job that surprised you?
Wow, that's a loaded question, I must say, D. Wills. As we all know, there were 7 head coaches fired. In my eyes, it should have been 10. So all 7 should have got fired, first and foremost. However, the one who I feel deserved it the most, I hate to say it because, you know, it's been long known in the NFL that minorities don't get a fair shot. But this brother, Romeo Purnell in Kansas City, just absolutely stinks. You can't go 2-14 with the talent that he had with the running back in Jamal Charles and 5 Pro Bowlers. How do you go 2-14? Second season as the coach. First, he was the interim head coach, 2-1 last season. But overall, this brother went 2-14. And he had talent. And he's playing in Kansas City, where it's a tough stadium to play in. Just 2-14 in an abysmal conference. I mean, this brother, I bet you any quality coach, Belichick would have had them boys in the playoffs. Tom Coughlin would have had them boys in the playoffs. I do not buy into Romeo Purnell nor his system. He should have been the first to go. I believe he was one of the first to go. So he is the number one hot fire out of all 7 coaches that got fired. Now, the second part of your question is equally as intriguing. I got 3 coaches that kept their job that shouldn't have. 1, Jason Garrett, Dallas Cowboys. They went out on a limb today and fired Rex Ryan's brother Buddy, who I have the utmost faith in to run a defense. He's going to have a job by tomorrow, kind of like Andy Reid. So Jason Garrett for the Dallas Cowboys should have been gone. Rex Ryan should be gone. The Jets are just a mess. They are just a mess. I can't even find another adjective to describe the problem that is the New York Jets. Last but not least, my brother's probably going to kill me for this, but Jim Schwartz needs to go. No way. Yeah. You got Calvin Johnson on one side, you got Matthew Stafford slanging the ball, and you got that defense. Hey, you had 4 first-round picks in the last 6 years. You were in the playoffs last year, and you only went 4 games this year. Jim Schwartz needs to be fired. Therefore, the 7 coaches that got fired, along with Jason Garrett, Rex Ryan, and Jim Schwartz, all 10 of them should be gone, if you ask me.
All right, RJ, how do you add to that?
My first question would be, where is all this talent I'm hearing about in Kansas City? Well, I'm not a Romeo Purnell fan either. Hearing J.P. wax poetic about the talent on that team has me a bit baffled. I tend to agree. Jason Garrett definitely probably is not the answer in Dallas. His clock management has been very porous. His brother. What was his brother's first name?
Buddy.
Yeah. No, that's his dad.
Oh, you're right about that.
What's his name?
He said,
Buddy
he
is
said,
a pop. So I got it confused.
He said, Buddy. He said, Buddy, Rod. He's trying to resurrect.
It's the whole family. Get them all out of there.
It's Rob Ryan.
Yeah. The funny thing is, I mean, you say Rob Ryan wasn't the problem, but he's actually. I look back on it. He's never had a team in the playoffs with a strong defense. So, you know, I got a question. You got a questionable head coach. You got a questionable D coordinator. Can we fire Jerry Jones in Dallas?
You can't fire Jerry Jones. And if you think about Rob Ryan's defenses, he was actually, in Cleveland. And he had formidable defenses at a time when Cleveland, that was probably the only bright spot in Cleveland at the time, which is why he got the job in Dallas. And if you're talking about a philosophy, you know, having any kind of, you know, identity, it's probably their defense is probably the only clear place on their team where they had some identity. Offensively, I don't know what their identity is. And you talked about clock management, you know, with Jason Garrett, which is my ultimate criticism with him, is that they were in games and he – the situations that you practice all the time, they were on a regular basis not making great decisions down the stretch that cost them games. And for him to keep his job, I'm with you on that. in terms of, you know, Jason Garrett should have been gone. And it's like he got pitches on Jerry. But Jerry will fire everybody else, but Jason. Like, is he his long lost child or what is it? You know, is this the actual show Dallas playing out for us down there? I don't know what's going to happen. Are we going to have somebody pop up and find out that Garrett is one of Jerry's long? I don't know what it is, but I don't know how he's keeping his job. You know, at the same time, great organizations have continuity. And so, you know, this whole theory that you can change your coaches to a championship, at some point you got to settle in with continuity. You think about the Steelers with three coaches in, 30 years. You got to have something that allows for you to develop an identity. I'm not saying that's the reason to stay with Jason Garrett, but I'm saying that great organizations, you can't make those kind of changes on a regular basis. I think since, 2008, I think only five people who are currently head coaches have had their job prior to 2008. So they've had, you know, you've had, of course, 27 or so or whatever coaching changes. I mean, it's been crazy. So where is the continuity? And so those are things that I don't like. And that's why I think Lovie Smith, in some senses, out of all of them, probably should have kept his job, given the major injuries he had to some of his premier players, and they still went 10-6. And so, because the Bears are not going to operate like they're the second, third biggest city in America. You know, they operate like they're a small market, like they're Kansas City. So they're not going to go out and pay for John Gruden. If you're not going to go out and pay for John Gruden, what are you going to get?
And, you know, that's my thing. We talk about who wrongly got fired, but it's really about who's going to step in and replace you. And do you have a better option? And that's why I don't want to see the Lions get rid of Jim Schwartz unless you're telling me that a Gruden or somebody better is going to come along. Kansas City got it right. They got rid of Romeo Crennel and put in Andy Reid, somebody who I think we'll all agree is a much better coach. Now, on the flip side, the Bears fired Lovie Smith, who's been with them for a long time, but I mean, they're interviewing 13 other coaches. So do they really have a plan intact, or are they just getting rid of Lovie to fire him?
Yeah, it just almost felt like they thought they had something they needed to do, because they definitely didn't have a plan, and they'll end up with a worse coach than Lovie.
Well, if you look at why they fired Lovie, they explained it very eloquently. They said it's because their defense has been stout the 9 seasons they've been there, but they haven't grown in an offense-heavy league. Their offense has remained stagnant. They brought in players. They brought in Jay Cutler. They brought in Brandon Marshall, who both have a phenomenal chemistry together. They brought in weapons to try to revamp that offense. They switched coordinators a couple times trying to get an up-tempo offense, and it just hasn't worked. And when something doesn't work year after year after year, you're in Chicago, the third biggest city in the United States of America. You can't miss the playoffs 6 out of 9 years and think it's acceptable. I would have got rid of Lovie a couple years back, the year where he underachieved after they went to the Super Bowl. So I couldn't disagree with you guys even more. I agree, who do you bring in? Do you spend the money and get Cowher, a Pittsburgh old coach, or Gruden, or, you know, anybody? I'd say you get rid of them. Start fresh. You got enough talent to become a playoff team. I think the Bears were a better team than Minnesota this year, but I think they underachieved under Lovie Smith's watch, and he deserved to go. And my last point is digressing back to RJ challenging Kansas City. I'd love for you guys to answer me: is Jamaal Charles, the 1,509-yard rusher this year, now a Pro Bowl caliber running back? Is Dwayne Bowe, who, yeah, was injured the first part of this season, is he not a Pro Bowl caliber wide receiver? Peyton Hillis was on the cover of Madden last year because he's been great since he got in the league. What happened to him this year? You got two Pro Bowlers. You got two Pro Bowlers on defense, not Pro Bowl caliber guys that are going to the Pro Bowl this year. Them boys had some talent. I bet you, like I said, you put Belichick in Kansas City, they're going to the playoffs this year. They may lose in the first round, because other teams have more talent. But Kansas City should have won more than two games this year.
But if you now if you look at if you, but what they don't have is a quarterback. And if you look at the teams who have consistently made the playoffs and had success, they eight out of the top 10 rated quarterbacks made the playoffs. But I think the only place it didn't happen was for Breeze and the Saints. So who's your quarterback in Kansas City? You can have a great defense. You can have a lot of this stuff. But you got to have that success. I like what you said about the offense because I think when Lovey made his only mistake, I mean, when he made his mistake, and this is what some defensive coaches make mistakes, is in two things. How you let the offense grow even though you have a dominant defense, which is an issue, in Baltimore, is an issue for the Jets. If you think about the Jets have lost all their offensive talent since Sanchez started there. Every time they had a chance to sign an offensive free agent, for the most part, they let them go and figured they could find somebody else because they love defense. So Lovey's your discussion about the offensive coordinator piece is something where I say you have some value in terms of your argument because I think when they brought your boy in to run that wide-open offense, and then they let Olsen go, who was their best offensive threat and could have been a Pro Bowl tight end. I thought that was a mistake. I said, oh, that's the kiss of death. So I give you that. But even when you look at the fact that North Turner is getting fired, one of the things you could do, because Lovey has demonstrated ability to lead and has a lot of respect, maybe you take that decision from him and you bring North Turner in to run your offense. So there's ways that you can do it because – Chicago is not going to do Gruden. They're not giving their operation over to somebody. And if you know that's who you are as an organization, then what are you going to do? You're not going to get anybody better than Lovey if you're not giving over the power around the GM and player personnel stuff. And Chicago's not doing that. So if you understand who you are as an organization, and you understand Lovey is giving you enough, and I'm just giving this example of this stuff, then what you do, they should be doing what they're actually doing for the Jets. Because I don't think Ryan earned enough capital for him to get what he's been getting. So I agree with you on that. You know, but I think Lovey is someone, I think, he's got a Super Bowl appearance. So out of all these coaches we're talking about, he's been to the Super Bowl. So that
means
you're
still
that.
How many years ago was that?
What?
Rex Grossman was the quarterback of that team. Where's Rex today? He can't even sniff the field.
But when you talk about all those coaches, if you've proven you've gone, this is what I'm talking about, the patience of doing it. And I can't even say I'm saying this about Cincinnati because I'm crush Cincinnati. But Cincinnati knows who they are in their decision to hold on to Marvels is right because that's who we are. I agree with you, but the actions you're saying to do is as if you are prepared to do what Kansas City is prepared to do. I would say teams like Chicago ain't ready to do that kind of stuff.
Don't sleep
and
on
if you're not, then you need to look at something else. Huh?
I said don't sleep on them. I guarantee you they're going to make a splash, and I guarantee you they'll be in the playoffs next year if they keep the roster somewhat intact.
It might. We will put that on the set. Let me move to another thing. During a lot of this time, when a lot of these transition coaches, you know, college coaches always come up, and Chip Kelly decided to stay at Oregon. Do y'all have a sense of why? Because he's been highly, you know, we see the success with RG3 and everything else. What's your sense of why Chip Kelly is not making his way to the NFL? And what's your sense about college coaches coming to the NFL as we always get that kind of conversation here at this point in the year? I'll go with you, RJ.
You know, the way the NFL is going, passing league, and college are running these pro-style offenses, you see the success RG3 has had. You see the success Pete Carroll's had, a former college guy. I'm all for college coaches coming to the league, and I think Chip Kelly saw that as well. and I think he kind of overplayed his hand a little bit. If you remember, at Cleveland, he pretty much had a deal done. It was being reported that it was close to being signed, sealed, and delivered. And typically when you got a deal that's pretty much a done deal, it's really just money that's left to haggle about. And prior to getting that guarantee in his hand, he went off to Philly and took another interview. That didn't sit too well with Cleveland. But Chip was like, you know, I'm hot right now. I'm going to see how much I can get from these guys and see if Cleveland will bump up their offer. And, you know, Cleveland said, we're not playing this game. We take our offer off the table, which gave Philly all the leverage. And Philly was like, you know, this is what it is. And Chip Kelly was like, well, I'm going back to Oregon. That's how I think it played out.
So this idea around money and control, because, I mean, some of these college coaches have seen, you know, the importance of having control over things is very important. So, you know, getting the deal and the money the right way, because you don't know how long you're going to be there, you got to get the deal right. And so Chip Kelly's playing the game. It doesn't work. He goes back to Oregon, which isn't a bad move for him. So he plays that. Justin, how do you feel about that?
It's bigger than even getting the deal right. I think he just wanted more money than anybody was willing to pay him because he was hot.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, Chip Kelly's offense is the hot offense right now, and I think he kind of overplayed his hand a little bit.
Mm-hmm. So overplaying his hand, Dustin, how do you feel about that?
I don't think he wants to be back in Oregon. I think he wants the NFL bread. Yeah, I don't think it was a good choice. Like, I'm going to just go back to Oregon. He says, no, this is what you're going to work for. And he was like, I'm going to go back to Oregon.
Justin, college coaches, Chip Kelly, they're talking about Saban. It was reports of $100 million over 10 years in Cleveland. This time of year, college coaches come up. What's your thoughts?
Well, I value RJ's perspective. I'm in no place to disagree with him. I think that could have very well played into it. However, my perspective is slightly different. I kind of look at it, you know, granted, Chip Kelly's not going to get you a national championship every year like Saban, but I look at him as a valued commodity in the college game. I think the people in Oregon value having Kelly around. I think they worship the ground he walks on. I think he's got that he can reach out and touch Nike and get free jerseys or brand new jerseys for every game. He's in a really good situation right now. I kind of look at Kelly and I look at Coach K when he was going to leave and go take the Lakers job a few years back. And Coach K looked back, talked to Mickey and said, for those who don't know, Mickey's his wife, lovely lady, of course. He said, I got a good thing here and I don't want to lose it. You know, Chip Kelly's got a good thing. He's competing for a national championship every year. The guy's lost a total of 3 games in the past 4 seasons. I mean, this guy is the coach of all coach and can recruit whoever he wants. He's got the players to win championships, and I wouldn't want to leave a kid like D'Anthony Thomas, you know, stuck with who knows who as a coach. That boy is bad. He can ride D'Anthony Thomas all the way to a championship possibly next year against Alabama in the championship game. He knows what he has on his roster right now. He knows his power in the college ranks. He knows that he could get fired next year going to the NFL and be stuck without a job. Anytime you see 7 to 10 coaches having the ability to get fired after an NFL season, knowing you're living a good life over there in Oregon, nice place to live, good salary. Again, you got Nike right there, right next to you, providing you everything you need. You got guys like LeBron James helping you recruit on the sideline during your bowl games, looking fresh. Kids want the new jerseys. Kids want the exposure that Oregon has to offer. Kids want the ability to play in that spread offense in college. That spread offense, you take that to the league and it don't work, he's gone in a blink of an eye. But Oregon will have fits trying to get rid of Chip Kelly, given what he's done for their program. Like, think about it. When were we talking about Oregon before this guy Kelly? We really weren't. They're the cream of the crop in the Pac-12. They started beating USC when Kelly came around. That was unheard of. You know, they started going to the championship games. Yeah, they lost to Bama, but they competed. I bet you they would have done much better than Notre Dame did last night in the championship game. So I think that Chip Kelly, he's got a good situation. He realized he's got a good situation. And the grass is not always greener on the other side of the fence.
Justin is crazy, man. It's like you've been reading my notes. This is a couple notes I made while you stayed. I was like, think Miles Davis, the running shoe. And what happened when you, and June Jones, and all these things. So if it doesn't work, what happens? I wrote down fool's gold. And then I wrote down Coach K has the blueprint. You know, at some point, you know, when do you just understand you can build your legacy and your statue? You know, that you can create what could be your Alabama of the West. And you don't have to deal with all the craziness of the NFL and all the salaries and everything else. So I think y'all make some valuable points about, you know, really understanding your opportunity to build your own legacy and create your own energy without all the craziness. Because someone like Chip Kelly already owns Oregon. He can do whatever he wants to do there. And he's going to get the money and the resources to do what he needs to do. So those are all great points to be made. So having said that, we've moved into the wild card weekend. And we had some incredible things happening over this weekend. I'll start with you, RJ. You know, what do we know now as a result of looking at this wild card week?
You know, I said it last time I was on the show, and I'll say it again. I'm giving props and praises to my underdog squad. What I know after watching the wild card games is that Russell Wilson probably needs to give Tim Tebow's PR people a call. Because I don't understand how this guy doesn't get the same kind of run Tebow got last year or RG3 at Luck get this year. Because, I mean, the squad is balling. They 11-5. Russell Wilson was a big part of that as a rookie. And they actually won a playoff game, the only rookie quarterback to win a playoff game. What I know is Seattle is for real, and Russell Wilson needs to get a lot more props than he's been getting.
Justin, what do we know now?
Well, I have to agree with RJ. Russell Wilson should be getting a lot more props than he does now. However, his point to he's the only rookie to win a playoff game, while it's true, there's somewhat of an asterisk behind it. If you look at the first two drives that Washington had when they had a healthy RG3 on the field, it looked like it was about to be Alabama, Notre Dame all over again. I mean, RG3 was doing whatever he wanted to from a passing perspective to that stout Seattle defense the first two drives. He took the hit to the knee, and that's when you saw Seattle kind of ramp up their defense and Seattle kind of take care of business after RG3 was hurt. Therefore, I think you give me a healthy RG3 for the entire four quarters, I think Washington walks away with that victory. No disrespect to Russell Wilson, I think he's great, but you know, 187 passing yards, not the best. When other guys are throwing over 200 and a couple touchdowns, one touchdown, it's all right. So I don't really put that win on Russell Wilson's shoulders. Although he's a great quarterback, he's a great rookie quarterback. I give him third best. You know, I think he played with the most talent around him if you compare him to RG3 and Luck. But he's a great quarterback. Don't want to take anything away from the kid. But he did do a phenomenal job leading that team. But I think his numbers overall could be better. And I think that the ceiling is very high for Mr. Russell Wilson. So that was just to touch on RJ's point. What I know about Wild Card Weekend is that the Baltimore Ravens are playing with a certain edge. They got something. I don't know if it's the Ray Lewis retirement. I don't know if it's Flacco with the chip on his shoulder trying to prove that he's elite. But I'm telling you, yeah, Denver's beat them the last nine, or Peyton Manning's beat Baltimore the last nine times they stepped on the field. But I got a funny feeling that the motivation that Baltimore's playing with right now, and what I saw them do, they had Andrew Luck look like a deer with the headlights on. I mean, they had Andrew Luck looking like he was back at Stanford playing against Baltimore's defense. I mean, these boys are for real. Ed Reed is the truth. Terrell Suggs is the truth. I am nervous for any team going up against Baltimore based on what I saw last weekend.
Yeah, I like those Ravens. I was actually on the field in Cincy with the Ravens, connecting with Coach Harbaugh and everything, and Ray and Suggs didn't play, but those cats were hyped. The energy around that team coming out they didn't win the game in Cincy, but there was something that I knew it. And when they had the announcement about his retirement, I was like, well, that's the worst news Andrew Luck got all week, because you're not coming out of Baltimore with a victory. But there's something about that you need to watch. And also, Peyton Manning hasn't had a great playoff performances. And so that Ravens team is an interesting kind of storyline. Let's talk a little bit about the Vikings versus the Packers, a couple key storylines. RJ, what was your thoughts on what happened with the Vikings with Joe Webb coming in as a late addition at starting quarterback and the Packers getting back Woodson? And what were your thoughts as you looked at that game and thinking about the Packers moving on?
I had two thoughts watching that game. One is that I can see the Packers kind of being this year's Giants. I know they went 11-5 this year, but they got off to a slow start. So their 11-5 really didn't get that that national play. They weren't really regarded as the upper echelon squad that, you know, I think they can be and they will be in the playoffs moving forward. So I can definitely see them being like the Giants and going on a hot streak and getting into the Super Bowl. So that was my one thought watching the Packers. My other thought was that Joe Webb just is not very good at throwing the football.
I think we all agree on that thought. It was like, and they were trying to make him a drop back quarterback, and I was just like, y'all just need to run zone read with this guy and let Peterson do his thing either roll him out and give him two options, either run or make, you know, two throws, one check down or deep. But he couldn't do much more than that. He just like the deer in headlights for that. Justin, you were talking a little bit about the Seattle Seahawks and the Redskins, kind of that first drive. What were some things as you watched that game, storylines that emerged for you with that game?
Again, it goes back to RG3's injury. I honestly believe in my heart of all hearts that if RG3 does not go out of that game with that injury, not even go out of the game, as long as he's not hobbled by that injury, I think Washington wins that game, and I think they win it easily. Like I said, if you watch those first two drives, Seattle didn't even make it difficult. I mean, they were scoring and moving the football at will. And my main storyline from that game is RG3's injury. Yes, Seattle's got a stout defense, but they just didn't show it in the first 7 minutes of the game. As you know, as they eased into the game, they got it together, but that's, again, an asterisk because of RG3's injury. So I think the biggest thing was RG3's injury, Russell Wilson's quarterback play, and Marshawn Lynch, who's just an all-out beast. He ran over that Washington defense as if they were in college. So I do have a newfound respect for Mr. Marshawn Lynch.
Well, and one of the things I'll throw out for both of you, we know that RG3 can play from the pocket. You know, it was good that they were doing his own read, and he has some stuff in terms of longevity for him. What do you think happens in the offseason? What do you think you see next year around with him? I mean, this is a guy that could be their franchise player for the next 10 years, 12 years. I mean, what would you do based on what you've seen from him this year, and what adjustments would y'all make for next year for him?
Same adjustments I made for Michael Vick after his rookie year. Try to teach the brother how to slide effectively.
Mm-hmm.
That's first and foremost. Once he gets back healthy, once he has his surgery, fixes up and repairs that knee, he needs to learn, you know what, you can't make every play. You can't be a home run hitter out there. Sometimes you need a base hit. Get that 10 yards and get out of bounds. Get that, you know, first 5 yards, make it second and five. Slide. Don't take that unnecessary punishment. You're 22 years old. You got your whole career ahead of you. You're not going to make it playing with reckless abandon like you've been playing. You're not Tebow. You're not built like Tebow. You're not built like Cam Newton. You're a little skinny guy, you know. You can't, you're not, you know, you're not, don't have to same physical stature as Andrew Luck. You can't run around back there and take all this punishment. You're going to end up just like Mike Vick was this year, concussed multiple times a season and missing half the season. It's just not healthy, and that's the number one thing he needs to work on this year. He's got the ability to pass from the pocket. He's got the speed. Once he gets the smarts as to when to slide and when to get out of bounds, I think he's going to be a phenomenal player.
And I think, you know, and I think there's some things, you know, they're in Washington, and I think there's some things they could even take out of the playbook. They used to deal with Theismann, who was a good athlete, and sometimes roll you out with the option to pass or throw, and some different stuff that is not designed to just run, but is designed to do some different things and just to get him and move the pocket and allow for him to throw. And even some of the stuff they did with Elway back in the day where, you know, Elway was, I mean, sometimes people forget that Elway ran and scrambled, but it was by design, by choice. It was limited. It was sliding as a way of moving the chains, as a way of bringing people up so he can go over the top. So I think they just got to continue to evolve that his ability to play because, you know, he can do it. He can read defenses. He can do all that stuff that you need him to do. He can use his legs when he needs to rather than the way in which they were doing it this year. RJ, I'd like to we heard Justin talk a little bit about the Ravens-Colts game, but what was your thought about the Ravens-Colts game?
I'm not as high on Baltimore. While I am rooting for them, that's my adopted squad, them and the Seahawks. What I took away is just enjoying watching Ray Lewis play, man. I want to keep watching him play as long as he's going to be out there. So, you know, all that other stuff, Ray Rice fumbles, Joe Flacco leaving me with an kind of feeling. I'm just enjoying watching Ray Lewis play.
Okay. And Justin, the Texans and the Bengals. I haven't just watched the Bengals up in person. And that defense is for real, but I knew they were going to struggle offensively. What would you come away from with that game?
I'm going to sum this up in one word. Boring. That was the worst football game I've ever seen in my entire life. I don't believe I watched the whole thing. Andy Dalton having 4 passing yards at halftime is just – he almost needed to be kicked out the league for that performance. I do not understand what either one of those two teams are doing. Matt Schaub, how in the world did he make the Pro Bowl with that noodle arm? This dude makes some horrible decisions. He can't even throw a simple check down without it getting picked going back to the house. That was the worst football game I've ever seen in my life. Both teams executed poorly. I don't give the Houston Texans a chance in New England next week. I think Cincinnati or other team up and coming, until they do something with Dalton, I don't like them at all after that one performance. Great season, but that one performance washed it all away. They stink.
And I saw that beginning, even though they won the game Gronkowski, whatever, the backup actually helped them late in the game on that one. But, you know, Dalton through the third quarter or whatever he played in Cincinnati while I was there, you know, I was like, they just don't look good. He was missing to A.J. Green, all that simple stuff. And I was like, well, you know, this is a team that played the Steelers the week before and they had it all together, but they're just too inconsistent and they got the talent. So I think you hit it, but it was like the Texans and Schaub were just, we got to win a playoff game. He was just happy to win a playoff game. But you know they're going into New England a buzzsaw, and that's going to be interesting kind of thing. Do y'all have any impressive performers for last weekend when you were looking at it? RJ, do you have any impressive performers?
Yeah, you know me, I'm going on Marshawn Lynch. We go for 132 yards on 20 carries in the playoffs. You know, you gotta be able to run the ball to drop some of that clock. Marshawn Lynch really put in a big performance. What a memorable play might have had on that fumble where he just picked it up with the one hand and kept running.
So we got Marshawn Lynch in there, Justin.
Well, RJ took my thunder. I got to go with Marshawn Lynch as well. I mentioned the guy earlier. He's just a flat-out beast, had a phenomenal year this year. backed it up with another phenomenal game in the playoffs. I have to agree with my big brother. I got to go with Marshawn Lynch as well. In addition to Marshawn, though, I have to give the hometown Mr. Western Michigan University himself some credit, bouncing back from an injury-plagued season. Greg Jennings played outstanding. He made some big plays for Green Bay early on in the game to give them a nice, comfortable cushion. I like what Greg Jennings did in addition to Marshawn Lynch.
And I would say Green Bay's defense, after getting gassed by AP and more the impact of having Woodson coming down in that box and making a difference, in addition to what y'all said about Marshawn Lynch, when you talk about them possibly being the Giants of this season, the impact of Woodson and his Hall of Fame career that he's having, but what he does down in that box, and given that they couldn't stop this cat at all, I think is if they do go, that performance will be something that's was able to catapult them to having a successful game as they go out to San Francisco. I'm not quite sure if they can win it, but if it is the confidence that they can get from what they were able to do with Peterson. We're going to transition into talking about the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, as the game changer would say. And I know Justin is the wait for this segment, and we got to bring you back so you and the game changer can really get in it. But I know you got some shots you're going to hit, but let's start. Justin, I'll start with you, and then they're talking about Dwight and Kobe, and even if you've looked on, I think on Facebook, they've had, if you follow Laker feed, they had Kobe and Dwight in the training room playing like they're fighting with D'Antoni laying on the training table. I don't know if you've seen that one or not. I'm trying to say, there's no real rift, but is there a rift? And if there's been conversations about possibly moving Dwight, what do you think? What's going on in L.A.?
First off, did you ask me, did I see it? You should ask me, did I send it? Of course I saw it. It was probably one of the first. I loved it, to be honest with you. I think that, they're making light of something that's been being overblown in the media to, it being so flabbergasted that they almost came to blows and that Kobe took a cheap shot and Dwight had to be restrained. Funny how that came from an anonymous source and no real reporters are reporting on it. I think that just because the Lakers are in somewhat of a turmoil or in a funk or in a downward spiral, however you want to slice it and dice it, people are going to make whatever they can out of this and magnify it because they're the L.A. Lakers. They're the most popular team in all of professional sports. So, of course, any piece of negative media hype the world can spew on them, they're going to do so. But I'm here to tell you, let's not be creatures of the moment. Let's remember that we haven't even got to the All-Star break yet. Let's remember we still have about 66% of the season left to play. Let's remind you they still have the best score in the game in the Black Mamba. Let's remind you that they have the most dominant center in the game who's still working his way back to being 100%. You can tell by his lip that back is just not quite there yet. Okay, let's not forget they got the two-time champion in Paul Gasol, who's still trying to figure out things with D'Antoni. Let's not forget they got the two-time MVP in Steve Nash. It's still early. Miami started off 10-10 when they put together their superpower. Now, I'm not saying that L.A. is going to win the championship. I'm off that bandwagon, but they're going to be a force to be reckoned with in a team that nobody wants to play in the playoffs. It's turmoil right now, but I think without no struggle, there's no progress, and I think that right now they're putting it all together. They're going through the struggle to make them a better team. Dwight needs somebody like Kobe pushing him, fighting him, getting under his skin to force him to be the dominant force that we've known him to be while he was in Orlando. I think that D'Antoni was a bad hire. However, they're stuck with him now because they're still playing Mike Brown. They're not going to play Mike Brown, D'Antoni, and Phil Jackson all at the same time. Therefore, D'Antoni's not going anywhere. The Lakers probably will make a move or two at the trade deadline, whether it's if they give up Pau Gasol and ship him back to Memphis and get Rudy Gay and some draft picks. Who knows? But the Lakers are going to do something that's going to get them younger and quicker on the wing, that's going to make Dwight a better player under the basket, and Kobe will have the ability to be effective on the wing. And we all know Steve Nash is the orchestrator of it all. I still like the Lakers to be formidable in the West. I'm not oversold that they're as bad as everybody makes them seem, because they're the 11th seed in the West right now. I like the pieces that they have around them. They just need to find a way to put it together.
RJ, what are your thoughts?
Wow. Well, I guess we can start with the Dwight-Kobe fight, beef, whatever you may call it. And, you know, like Justin said, I took it with a grain of salt, being that it came from a New York columnist. And in that same article, the New York columnist said that New Jersey would still be interested in Dwight, you know, next year after when he becomes a free agent. So I also took that with a grain of salt. But that being the case, I still think it's a story. And it's a story simply because we all know Dwight Howard is a little bit sensitive. He's a little touched at times. And while there may not have been a fight, there is definitely a headbutting, shall we say, of how one should conduct themselves in that locker room. You know, Kobe's intense all the time, 24/7, and Dwight Howard isn't. And so therefore, I agree with Justin that Dwight needs to be pushed. I just don't think Dwight wants to be pushed. So it's up in there for me whether Dwight is even going to want to come back next year, being that he will be a free agent. I don't think he's enjoying the Kobe experience. And that's why I think it is a story. Not because that there was some fight and these two are, you know, rolling around the dirt fighting somewhere, but more so because I don't see a future in L.A. for Dwight.
Where is Dwight going to go if that's a better situation? He don't have to deal with Kobe for another 2 years or so. That's his franchise when Kobe leaves. There's no better situation out there for Dwight. Dwight knows that.
Well, that's your opinion on Dwight. Dwight, we don't get to dictate what Dwight wants to do, but I can think of a few situations that, you know, may work for Dwight Howard. One being Chicago, if we're talking about pure basketball. But my thing is, Dwight wanted to be the man when he left Orlando. He wanted to be the man. He's not the man in L.A., and he doesn't like, just from what I've seen, I don't know the man, but I'm pretty confident in saying that he doesn't like the edge that Kobe plays with and brings to Dwight. So while you can say that it's best for Dwight to play with Kobe, I don't think Dwight feels that way. And ultimately, that's what matters.
And I would add that there's nothing, this is what makes the firing of Mike Brown such a disaster. Bringing in D'Antoni doesn't build any confidence in Dwight in the long-term vision of the organization, which is the Lakers' biggest problem is not on the court, it's in the front office. And it's not with Kupchak, it's with a person that's trying to prove something to his father. And so I think Dwight has a potential cutting bait, because he just doesn't see a vision that is clear about going forward. And that might free him up. Well, there's some other places where it's emerging. And so, yeah, I don't know how this riff or not, or whether or not, but what I do know, one of my good friends talks about one of the reasons why Mike Brown was fired is because he's affable. He's this kind of fun, lumpy guy. And you really can't win if you just kind of giggly and fun, lumpy kind of guy. That the people who win are the ones who are serious and cutthroat around this. And if you look at Kobe and Dwight, Dwight's an affable guy. He's a fun-loving kind of jokester. Kobe is like, we come to work every day. And that tension is going to be interesting. Even though he's only going to be there a couple more years, it seems like Dwight, emotionally in his own development, where he's at in terms of his development as an adult, is it doesn't feel like he has the capacity to be able to deal with that even for 2 years, because Kobe's going to put expectations on him that even some of his coaches didn't do. and definitely none of his other teammates did it to him. And so it'll be interesting. If he's willing to take that and see Kobe as a mentor, then that'll be something about Dwight's maturity, and he's growing. If not, it's back to what RJ said, you know. And so it'll be interesting to see how this emerges as well. One of the things that we talked about early on, I know when we were talking about draft or, you know, first-year players, you know, Royce White came up. And Justin, I'll let you talk about this, but one of the things is that we know in terms of his anxiety and traveling and, you know, there's a lot of accommodations you have to do. This is a highly talented guy. Do you see him as someone that's worth that kind of investment, and you think about the kinds of accommodations you have to make for him to really feel comfortable with the pro game?
Now, I need to preface this. I want all you real sports guys, fans out there, dig into your archives. Go get the tape. I've seen the tape. All of my co-hosts, PhD, Game Changer, D. Wills, everybody was high on Royce White. I sold my stock on Royce White, and let me tell you why. 2009, 2010. Royce White gets a full-ride scholarship to Minnesota. He's suspended in less than a month for theft and disorderly conduct. He gets back to the team next year. He gets suspended for laptop theft. He ends up leaving the program, announces that he's transferring on YouTube. Doesn't consult the coach. Doesn't consult the AD. He does it on YouTube. Who does that? Guy did one successful year in Iowa State. They overachieved as a team. Kudos to him. He's turning his life around. The guy gets to the NBA. He feels like he's the number one pick, and he tells the team, I'm not doing a deal with you unless you guarantee me these certain things in my contract to deal with my mental disorder, in which it seems like at this point he's using his mental disorder as an excuse to be insubordinate. The guy wanted to buy a bus and travel the entire NBA season by bus. Think about taking a bus to Houston to Los Angeles to go play, and then the next night going to Sacramento to go play, and then going all the way to the East Coast on a freaking bus. Is this guy serious? After they denied him the bus, this guy wants to sue them and brought in his doctors to say the Houston Rockets are not complying with his disability. They work out all these issues, and then they say, okay, get in shape, go get some playing minutes under your belt, go to the D-League, and this guy refuses to go to the D-League. Who is too good to go? Nolan Smith, NCAA champion, 2 years with the Portland Trail Blazers. They sent him to the D-League this year just to get experience, and he went with a smile on his face. This guy, Royce White? You ask the commoner walking down the street who's Royce White, they're going to say, who? And this guy's turning down assignments? I would sell my stock in Royce White. Royce White may never play a game in the NBA if you ask me. That's my take on Royce White. Take it away, fellas.
I'm gonna let that one marinate. We're not even going to have anybody else comment on this one. I'm going to have to bring the Game Changer back in. I think you set this one down, and it's got a lot of issues we got to unpack. But I think you picked this one. One of the stories we didn't really get to carry because we were away, and I'll hit you with this, RJ, is Avery got let go by the Brooklyn Nets. And they got P.J. Carlisimo taking over as coach. First of all, was it justified? And Justin, I know you, it'd be good for you to come in on this. I'll start with RJ. Was it justified? And then where did they go from here in terms of dealing with that?
Well, the first question, was it justified? And, you know, I guess I kind of see things with the player-owner relationship the same way Avery did. I mean, Avery said, I don't own the team, so they can fire me whenever they want to. And I kind of agree with him. If you don't own the team, I mean, you can be fired whenever you want. They want to fire you. That being the case, I think if I were the owner, I would not have fired Avery. I think Prokhorov and Jay-Z and whoever else is in that ownership group, they have a higher they see themselves as a better team than what they really are. I don't think it's a very good team. I think Avery Johnson did what could be done with that squad. He was kind of hurt by that fast start. He got off to, 11-4 start, and so people thought the Nets were a good team. When, in fact, they're really not a good team. So, you know, do I agree with the firing? No. But was it fair? Yeah. That being the case, I think that they should go with a Jeff Van Gundy. I'd like to see Van Gundy get that job. He's got New York size, good coach. And they got to give whoever comes in some time, because that roster is not a championship roster.
Justin, RJ, you broke it down. I love it, Justin.
I agree and I disagree with RJ's sentiments towards Avery Johnson and the Brooklyn Nets. I think that's a very talented roster. I think they have arguably what one could consider a top three backcourt in the entire NBA. Anytime you have, category as a top three backcourt in the entire NBA, I think there's going to be expectations. When you got a center who's top five at his position in Brook Lopez, when you got guys. Gerald Wallace. You got Chris Humphreys, who averaged a double-double last year. Marshawn Brooks, who they had high expectations for the previous two seasons. Andre Blatch, who was supposed to contend for Sixth Man of the Year this year. That boy's got some talent. And I think that they definitely underachieved under Avery. I think that they're better than a 500 team. I don't think they're a championship caliber team, but they're definitely not a 500 team. And that's what they were playing under Avery. And as much as Avery's been known to be a Popovich guy and be a hard ass, he kind of went soft on D-Will. D-Will would challenge Avery in practices and in the media and act as if, you know, Avery's not relinquishing the rights of the team to him. Like, you got to put the onus on D-Will. D-Will, he's giving you everything you want. Why are you treating this man like that? And I think that his skepticism of Avery's system as a whole is what eventually did Avery in. I probably would have fired Avery as well because he didn't have control of the team. And the team was underachieving under Avery. Since Avery left, the team is 6-1. PJ's got them boys playing some good basketball. Joe Johnson is being the Joe Johnson of old. He's hit a couple game winners. He hit for 30 the other night, 33 to be exact. I mean, they're starting to turn that corner now to be a contender in the East. Again, I don't pick them to go to the finals, but they're going to be there when the dust is settled as one of the top four teams in the Eastern Conference, and I think it's because they fired Avery. I don't think they'd be there if Avery was still the coach. They wouldn't be a top four team at the end of the season. Now that they did, I guarantee you they're going to be there.
But I would say that the things that Avery was doing, and a lot of times it's like working out, right? When you work out, you might have some initial great gains, and then you have some slowdown. You might gain some weight, and then you might, especially if you're trying to build your metabolism up, you might have some success in the first week, but then you might gain some weight because your fat can going to muscle, and a whole bunch of things are happening. And one of the things that he was doing, and you mentioned Lopez, was really trying to work on his aggressiveness and trying to work on getting him to be physical and control the middle and the paint. So he was working on some things I thought were the foundation for long-term success. But when you do that, you're going to have some nights, some runs where you're going to struggle. It's not always going to fit together. And I think right now they're benefiting from that early work that Avery did. But my question here is D-Will a top five point guard? That's one question. But the other thing is he beginning to get a reputation as a coach killer? Because he's linked to the reason why Schlonga.
Well,
and now you got
coach
Avery going. So he's a coach killer. But that's not a good thing. So he's a coach killer.
He's definitely a coach killer. But you could say the same for Carmelo Anthony. You know, I mean, some coaches and some players just don't mesh. I mean, Michael Jordan ran Doug Collins out of town. Is Michael Jordan a coach killer? You know, you got to put
the... But Michael Jordan ran two coaches out of town. He ran one out. That's not a coach killer. But when you run
two
out,
you're one off. 1-2, you're one off. If he runs, you know, the next guy off, then that's three. That's a little bit different. 1-2, it just didn't work. Sloan's a hard ass. Avery's a hard ass. These new coaches need to find a way to connect with these younger players. It's kind of like the NFL. Those old school Jimmy Johnson, hard nosed guys that don't relate to these young players now, and they don't make it anymore.
Can I get some of this action?
Okay, go ahead.
Whether D. Wills is a coach killer or not, you know, who knows? It is a bit concerning that it was happened twice in two or three years that he's got somebody fired. That is a bit concerning. But you know, Justin mentioned the Nets going 6-1 since Avery's been fired. You got to take that into context. The teams they beat: Charlotte, Cleveland, Washington, Sacramento, Philly. Avery could have gotten those teams beat as well. Avery had a tough schedule when they went through their loss. And now PJ is kind of feasting on some of these bad teams. So it's not like Brooklyn's turned a corner. They're beating bad teams, which is what they're supposed to do. I mean, you mentioned all these players that Brooklyn has. It's like a fantasy squad. You got these guys who can score, but where are the defensive stoppers? Brook Lopez is a liability in the paint. Avery Johnson was trying to teach them defense. And they just don't have defenders, and that's where they got caught up.
And I mean, and he had some injuries through a couple games. So I mean, there were some things. I just felt like, and I'm not saying you don't fire him at the end of the season, but I felt like he should at least have run this season. If he didn't make the playoffs, then you fire him. But I felt like he earned enough to make it. To take this team on a playoff run, so that's this will be a discussion that we'll keep looking at what's happening in Brooklyn. Well, we had a big game last night, gentlemen. I was hanging out with a couple of Alabama alumni football players. One played on Stallings, the last championship team that Stallings had. Another one played on one of the SEC championships. They hosted it, and we had a couple of ND fans in there. Without saying it was. Lopsided, not only on the field, but in that room in terms of trash talking. And y'all had a chance to look at this. We're going to just do a recap. But when y'all think about it, and I'll start with you, RJ, what did you see were the key plays? What was the moment? What was when you look at that game, what was the difference? What happened?
Key plays or
key, or just – I don't even know if there were key plays with that. What did you see? Because we basically just talked about the first quarter. what was the difference between the two teams in terms of how they showed up last night? In your mind?
In my mind.
You were such a beat down. You can't even.
That was what you get when you put grown men up against college kids. That's what happened. that tends to be what happens, D.
And one thing I'll say, and I'll get over because I know Justin got something to say. This is what I noticed right up front is, and I could not believe it defensively, is that the linebackers were like, 6 yards, 7 yards, 8 yards. They looked like they were playing in the secondary. And I could tell that they were trying to get them playing a little bit deep so they could come downhill and meet the running backs. But I don't think they understood how violently, and I'm going to use the word violent a couple of times in terms of the way the running backs for Alabama, they run violently, but the linemen play violent. It's like a assault and battery. It's like they grab you, and the linebackers were just catching linemen and then catching hits. And when I saw that in the first couple of drives, I'm like, it's over. I said, you're not playing on Alabama's backfield side of the line of scrimmage. You're playing 4 or 5 yards deep on your side. And when I saw that, I was like, this is over. And then when I saw that Notre Dame's offense had no innovation, they were just throwing it deep. and then throw to any of the running backs and make the linebackers cover them out the back. They didn't do any of that stuff they've done all year long. And then on top of it, they didn't bring Reese off the bench as a change of pace when it was obvious they weren't moving the ball. I said, well, y'all through. Y'all doing nothing that helps y'all get here. And they just beat them down. But I'll digress. Justin, what were your thoughts?
Well, my thoughts were Notre Dame overachieved all year. Shouts out to Kelly for having those boys prepared the first 12 games of the season. I think that we need to look at the teams that Notre Dame beat up on. I think before the season started, we thought Michigan was great. We thought Michigan State was going to be great. We thought USC was going to be great. All these teams that we thought were potential roadblocks come Notre Dame's schedule, I think those teams ended up being less than we thought they were. So we had this false sense of, oh, wow, Notre Dame is back. We get them on the big stage against the big boys. You know, I think any SEC team would have done that same exact thing to Notre Dame. I told my wife before the game started, you know, Notre Dame's not going to be, you know, within 10 points of these boys. When I saw the second play of the game, where my man A.J. McCarron went deep to number 9, Amari Cooper. When I saw that play, I thought, oh, it's over. Because that opened up the middle of the field. You know, they had to be concerned about the long pass. And when they were concerned about the long pass, that stout Notre Dame off defensive line that we heard so much about all year, those Alabama D-line, O-linemen ate them boys up, spit them out. And number 42, Lacy, ran through them boys like it was nobody's business. Lacy, to me, reminded me of Trent Richardson last year.
That's right.
He is Trent Richardson Jr., running downhill, powerful, I'll use your word, violent, and just aggressive. And I love that kind of smash-mouth football. They said, we're going to let our O-line beat your D-line, and that's where we're going to take you out. Alabama did whatever they wanted to do the entire game. They ran the football effectively. They had two rushers over 100 yards. Each of them went to touchdown. They had a receiver over 100 yards. McCown had the game of his life. His girlfriend even got more publicity than Notre Dame's secondary and linebackers from last night. I don't know if y'all heard. She went from 100 followers to 100,000 overnight.
That's right. Untowed Twitter followers overnight. They were winning all fronts in Alabama.
I'm telling you, man, Alabama, they're the big boys of the big boys. They're the best dynasty we've seen in college football, in definitely in this decade, but probably since, I don't even know if I want to go as far back to as Tommy Frazier and Lawrence Phillips and them boys in Nebraska.
Where do you put Saban all time in terms of coaches? Is he reaching that? Is he reaching that all time conversation, or does he need more work? You know, what, 4 national championships in 8 years of college coaching?
4 championships in 8 years, 3 out of the last 4. He's got to be in the conversation, if you ask me.
And this is all I can say about who Saban is. When their center and the quarterback is fighting, and they got 42 points on the board, the roommates, because – it's not about the score. It's about getting it right. At that point, you understand that these are machines. They're not even looking at the scoreboard. It's just about getting it right. And even when you mess up on the snap count, that is the most Saban-esque. And it was authentic. It was like they weren't even paying attention to the scoreboard. It was just about Barrett was like, I got it right. This is when you're supposed to do it. And we're going to have a conversation about this. On the middle of the field. I mean, that tells you everything you need to know about who they are as a team and as a program, and that, you know, they're just on a whole another level. I've changed my whole perspective on the SEC. You know, everybody else needs to get better step their game up. And it's really about not just SEC football. It's about people like Saban and Les Miles have set a standard that everybody else is fighting for in that league, in their and they know they have to compete, so it raises the competitiveness. And until some of these other leagues get coaches who are and not just players, but it's also about standards of excellence that are forcing everybody else to raise their game, then nobody's going to compete against that. It is not going to happen. It ain't much to talk about that game. It was just a straight beat down. Do you think they bounce back next year? Do you think either one of these teams, obviously Alabama has the ability to reload. Do you think Notre Dame has the ability to be back there next year? They got the number one recruiting class in the country coming in Notre Dame at this point. Do you think they can make another run and come back next year? Either one of you.
RJ, I'll let you tackle that one.
Alabama, yes. Notre Dame, no. I agree with Justin. A lot of luck went into that 12-0 run. They'll probably be a good team. 12-0, though? Nah. And I think that this performance is going to hinder or hurt them. So if they are to go 11-1 or 10-2, they're not going to have a shot at that big dance because nobody's going to want to see them against the SEC team again next year. So I don't see Notre Dame coming back.
And I think that they're going to have to schedule some SEC teams. You'd be surprised. Brian Kelly might know that he's going to have to schedule some SEC teams if he wants to really get a taste of and get his players ready for what that's all about. In addition to playing the Michigans of the world and who also have the top five class this year, and is going to get better, but he's going to have to schedule some of these SEC teams, in the future, so he can get that test run during the season. Well, gentlemen, we're going to pay the bills and we're going to get ready for what we always do.
Now we're going to get into our Resistance Digital Dog of the Week. Resistance Digital Solutions. Are you tired of running to the boys in blue? Are you done with listening to sales staff trying to upsell you technology that you don't need? We've all been there. So, what did the real sports guys do? We contacted Resistance Digital Solutions for all our technology needs. They are not there to meet sales quotas or make profit margins. They simply just want to sell you what you need at a fair price. From iPads to PCs to flat screens, TVs, or intricate home theater systems, they customize every solution based on your needs. Check out their website at www.resistancedigital.com or email them at sales@resistancedigital.com for your custom technology solutions today.
All right. Our Resistance Digital Dog of the Week. I'll go with, we have to say the RJ for last. We'll let Justin, we'll let you go first.
My Resistance Digital just happens to be my favorite basketball player on the planet. I got to go with the man, Mr. Carmelo Anthony, who is my lead runner for NBA MVP this year. Last week alone, he had two games where he was over 40 points, one with 45, the other with 40. He was the NBA Eastern Conference Player of the Week, and he punked Kevin Garnett last night, which I thought was in great taste, given how disrespectful KG was to that man's wife and mother of his child. So, therefore, my Resistance Digital Dog of the Week is Mr. Carmelo Anthony.
I love the way Carmelo – it's like Lala had a conversation with him before the season, like, we're not going to any more events with LeBron and – D-Wade, and you know I'm going to have a ring. But he diving into the stands. But last night, when his competitiveness was up to another level, that's a great dog of the week.
We need more dogs.
My dog of the week, I was going to go a totally different round until I watched the game last night. My dog of the week is the Alabama offensive line. I have never seen on a college level the level of play from offensive linemen in the continuity in a college football environment where everybody's about spread offense and everything else. The best team in the land is about lining up in two tight ends, single back. Man, oh, man, I got mine, you got yours, and we're going to see who's better. Ain't no gimmicks. We just going to line up and do what we do. and they just maul you. It wasn't just they just dominate. The Notre Dame big linemen, how many of them did they carry off the field? Just straight up beat them up. They are my dogs of the week. The Alabama offensive line.
We need more dogs.
R.J. Page.
I gotta keep it inside the park. That's my bread and butter. You know, there was no baseball on the rundown, so I'm gonna have to inject the show with a little hardball. Hall of Fame votes come out tomorrow. Tomorrow at 12 o'clock. My dog of the week is any writer who gets over themselves and does the right thing and votes for Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens. There is absolutely no reason to keep one of the greatest hitters and one of the greatest pitchers out of the Hall of Fame. Those are my dogs of the week. Any Hall of Fame voter that gets it right and votes for those two.
We gonna see, and we're gonna have to bring you back to have a conversation and reaction to that, because we've been waiting to see what was going to happen as it relates to that. Coming up, we got some great stuff coming up in our next two shows. Next week, January 15th, we got Patrick Hayes. He's the founder and publisher of BallinMichigan.com. This is a grassroots site. One of the things we like to do in RSG is really give folks who are doing more grassroots work some exposure. And this site is everything about sports in Michigan. I mean, small college, whatever. And we want to be able to go around the country and pull folks out who are doing these things. You know, they'll tell you stories about players we've forgotten, we've never heard of. And so we're excited about having Patrick join us next week, and we'll have Game Changer and PhD, Phil T, PhD, back in the booth with us. And then in 2 weeks, January 22nd, we'll have Luke Hoover from RotoWire will be on here and ESPN.com to talk about the Super Bowl matchup. Luke has been on with us before, had an incredible following from him when he was on, and so we're looking forward to having Luke on the show with us in a couple weeks. So stay tuned. We got a lot coming out. We're coming out in 2013 with a lot of different things going on. We'll have Inside the Park starting up again here soon as we move towards baseball season, so we're looking forward to doing that with RJ and Mike and Hank and doing that. And then, you know, we're going to have some special stuff with Justin and the Game Changer that will be coming up. So stay tuned. In addition to these key guests coming up, some of those things. You know, gentlemen, before we close it out, you know, it's really been a pleasure to have y'all as part of the RSC family and what y'all been doing. You know, this is something that's been a dream of mine. And, you know, the fact that we're all here having this discussion today was really fun tonight. I look forward to doing it again soon. But Justin, I want you to, since we don't have Game Changer here, I want to give you a quick 30 seconds to send a message to the Game Changer. Because I know y'all been going to each other on Twitter, email, everywhere else. What do you want to say to him?
I want to say much love, much respect to my man Game Changer. I hope you listen tonight. I'm not even going to waste my time taking a shot now, because I know if I do, it's going to take the whole hour and a half next time we're on the air together, and I want to make sure we stay on track. No disrespect to Game Changer. We got a couple of outstanding issues that he's currently beating me on with the L.A. Clippers bench over the Lakers bench. James Harden is doing his thing, so much respect there. However, Joe Johnson is still the man, and we'll get into all that in our next NBA segment, which is coming up soon, I'm sure.
All right. So we you know we're going to have to put them in the booth together. RJ, as always, my man, you keeping baseball alive for us. It's been a pleasure to have you on, and we look forward to getting Inside the Park back up and running.
Indeed. I'll be sure to keep all the listeners posted. We'll be back soon.
All right, y'all. Until next week, thank you for supporting us here on RSG. Good night, and see you next week.
Peace.
Peace.
this next week, and then I'll try and send some time out so we can start to just kind of have a session about getting that ramp up. And I want to. Uh-oh. Are you there? Do you hear me? Do you hear me? Can you hear me?